Nicolas Cage has a reputation as an especially intense actor who takes his roles and his preparation very seriously. Whether he's romancing Cher in Moonstruck, chasing babies in Raising Arizona, or eating a real cockroach in Vampire's Kiss. Off camera, he's equally interesting. Nicolas Cage's essay this year for What I Did on My Summer Vacation would include marrying Elvis Presley's daughter. Cage won an Oscar for his performance as a suicidal alcoholic in Leaving Las Vegas, but also has starred in more mainstream Hollywood action films, like Con Air and The Rock. He's starred in two John Woo films, Face Off and the World War II film Wind Talkers, which comes out on DVD and video next week. Wind Talkers is set on the Pacific island of Saipan. In the movie, as in real life, tactical battlefield messages are being radioed through a new secret code using the Navajo language. Navajo Marines are the code talkers and translators. Cage plays a tough Marine who was assigned to protect one of these Navajo code talkers, but if the code talker falls into enemy hands, Cage is expected to kill the code talker so he can't reveal the code under torture. In this early scene, Cage is keeping his emotional distance from the new Navajo soldier he is protecting, who hasn't yet proven himself in battle and strikes Cage as a little naive. The code talker is played by Adam Beach.
What are you doing here?
Just trying to help.
Not what I meant.
You mean, what am I doing in this uniform?
It's my war too, Sergeant. I'm fighting for my country, for my land, for my people.
Not your people I'm worried about.
Listen, Enders, I'm a code talker. It takes me 2.5 minutes to do what used to take an hour. Now somebody wearing a lot more stripes than you thinks that's worth something.
Remind me to tell me when you got bullets flying over your head.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Let's talk a little bit about staging the war scenes. You know, you're directed by John Woo in this, and he's a terrific director and really has a gift for action and for depicting violence as well. I mean, he really knows how to stage that. Maybe you can take one of the battle sequences, maybe even the opening sequence, and describe a little bit about what happened on your end behind the scenes.
Well, the first battle sequence, not the first one in the movie, but with the whole team of men that we grow to know through the film, I think it's the invasion of Saipan. There must have been about 280 bombs that were set. There were about 14 cameras that were going at all times. There must have been, I don't know, 170 men. So it's kind of hard to describe. It's very methodical. It's, you know, okay, you're going to run through here. You're going to stop at this point. You're going to put down your weapon because you're out of bullets. Reload find another weapon, pick that up, and sort of spin around and stab this guy and shoot. It was a very physical shoot. And I remember once there was a bomb that went off, and I think John, who sometimes likes to surprise his actors by making the bombs bigger than we were told they were, a bomb went off and I walked into the fire by accident because the wind shifted, and it actually did burn me. And then I was torn with this sort of conundrum of having to either do my job and keep moving forward or back off and not get burned. And I think I went and moved forward, and then John had to call cut, 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 because he didn't want me to get burned. But, you know, it sounds a lot scarier than it is, because at the time that I was doing it, I just kept thinking, my God, you know, I'm just an actor. And there were people that really had to go through this for real, and I would play jokes with myself thinking, what would it be like if the director just said, all right, we're using real bullets now and real bombs, and here we go, action.
I want to ask you about Face Off, which is a really great and also really funny in its own way action film that you starred in with John Travolta, that was directed by John Woo, who directed your new movie. And in this movie, you're a sadistic criminal. John Travolta is an FBI agent on your trail. And for reasons really too complicated to explain here, Travolta is given a replica of your face through cosmetic surgery so he can go undercover and infiltrate your network. But then you, the villain, manage to get cosmetic surgery on your face so that you can look like Travolta, thwart his plan, and also gain intimate access to his family. So it's really an acting fest because, you know, you're playing the personality of John Travolta's character and he's playing yours, and you're imitating each other's mannerisms. And it must have been so much fun to do in that respect.
It was. And, you know, John Travolta is he's a superstar, but his idiosyncrasies are very subtle, and it was rather hard for me to grasp his vocalizations and his mannerisms. So, I mean, what we would do sometimes is get tapes of the dailies. So I would be watching him in the movie and try to copy some of his mannerisms, and then I also would go back and look at some of his older films and try to study it. But his impression of me is pretty impeccable. He did it at the American Cinematheque and on a videotape where he's pretending like he's me, and he still does it, and it brought the house down. People just think it's hilarious.
What did he pick up on you?
Well, I think he picked up the way I tend to elongate my words when I talk, you know, sort of like there's a glass object that I'm really interested in buying today, John.
And did you know that you did that, or did it make yourself conscious to hear him doing you?
Well, I didn't know that I did that, actually, but now I do. So now when I hear myself, I'm thinking, my God, am I becoming a caricature of myself, you know?
Is that a kind of self-consciousness that's potentially dangerous?
I don't know that it is dangerous. I mean, you know, when I first started acting, I felt that my voice was not interesting at all. And it occurred to me that all the great actors whom I loved were stars that had voices that are imitable. And you know, like Bogart or Cagney or Brando or Eastwood, and it's fun to be able to imitate them. So I worked very hard on trying to understand what was distinctive about my voice and try to accentuate it. But so I've always believed that voice and the actor are important together.
One thing I find interesting about your voice is that it's on the one hand very kind of colloquial sounding, and on the other hand, you have this impeccable pronunciation.
No, thank you.
You know, so it's an odd mix of things.
Well, my father is a literature professor, and I remember, you know, he always spoke with this kind of distinction in his voice, and I guess that was a choice for him. He told me that once, that he, because he's a literature professor, that he wanted to speak with distinction and to speak accurately with proper English. And so I guess I'm sort of an amalgamation of my father and also just this kid that grew up in Long Beach, California, you know, surrounded by, you know, people that did not speak with distinction. So it's sort of a combination of things,
right.
I guess.
Actor Nicolas Cage. His movie Wind Talkers comes out next week on video and DVD. We'll be back with more of Terry's interview after a break. I'm David Bianculli. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with actor Nicolas Cage.
I want to ask you a little bit about Leaving Las Vegas, which you won an Oscar for that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is based on a story by a writer who was so depressed he actually committed suicide before the movie was made. You play a character who wants to drink yourself to death, and then you meet a prostitute who you fall in love with, but it's not going to stand in your way of drinking yourself to death. Did you feel like you really understood that kind of driving depression?
Well, I made a choice early on in the rehearsal process that I wasn't going to play him depressed because I always felt that there's nothing sadder than a person who's in a sad situation than a person who's in a sad situation and doesn't know it. So consequently, I thought that Ben Sanderson, even though the truth is he is so depressed that he's going to drink himself to death, on the surface, he had freed himself, and he would be smiling a lot and laughing a lot, and I thought that would make it even more sad. And the idea there was that, you know, if someone isn't holding on to life anymore, and I compared it to like a man who's not struggling in the river, you know, he's not trying to hold on to branches anymore. He's not trying to stay afloat. He's let go, and he's very relaxed, and he's floating down the river. And that's how I saw Ben. I saw him as somebody who had let go and was not afraid to die, and therefore he could do anything, and he was going to have 4 weeks to do it, and he was going to have one big party, and he was responsible about it. He cashed out. He cleared his debts. And he wasn't going to be a burden to anybody anymore. He wasn't going to be a burden to his boss. He feels bad that he upset his boss. I got the idea that he was an elegant man at one point, so that went into the costumes. But to answer your question, I didn't play him depressed.
I read that your mother was depressive, that she suffered from depression. And I don't know whether she was the kind of wisecracking depressive that your character is in Leaving Las Vegas. My guess is that she wasn't. And I'm wondering if your knowledge of her depression informed your performance in any way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it did. I think there are moments in the movie where I watch and I go, well, that's Mom, you know. But these are things that happen sort of almost by accident or by spontaneity. I don't think about it. You know, it just, it's sort of on me that way. But she was a good mother. I mean, she still is, and she's, she isn't going through the same things that she was when I was a kid. But it's impossible for it not to affect me artistically on some level.
You had to be drunk for a lot. Your character had to be drunk for a lot of Leaving Las Vegas. There's a lot of very cliched ways of playing a drunk person. We've all seen the cliches. What did you do to try to play the way you thought this character would be drunk? And I'm wondering if you drank a lot yourself while preparing for the role, just to kind of get a sense of mechanically what goes on when you've had a lot to drink.
Well, for one thing, I did look at a lot of movies dealing with that subject matter, and let's see. I looked at Lemon in Days of Wine and Roses, and Milan in The Lost Weekend, and Dudley Moore in Arthur, and they were all excellent performances, and some for different reasons. Dudley Moore in that movie, because he was really good with the sound level. Like when people get drunk, they start talking much louder, and he would do that in the film, and he hit on that. I think the performance that affected me the most, where I said that person's not acting, that person's really drunk, was Albert Finney in Under the Volcano. And he is such a fine actor, I'll never really know, but I was convinced that when he's walking through those streets with his sunglasses on and his tux, that he was drunk. But I think Mike Figgis even asked him about it. He said, no, you tell Nick that I wasn't. I just, I would sip something to get a sense of the taste, and then I would spit it out. So I think I went with Albert's sort of model, really. But I would, in fact, drink on a couple scenes in that movie, because I wanted it to be extremely real. And I remember I would drink on my own and then videotape it, me getting drunk, so that I could see what I was like. And then I destroyed the videotape. But there was one scene in the casino where I freak out and I sort of smash the table and break a glass and start shouting. that I was completely inebriated, and so much so that I had to crawl to my room after I had done the scene, and I don't think I ever made it into my hotel room. I actually fell asleep outside the door, woke up in the morning in the hallway. But I was experimenting with the idea of being out of control in art, and being in control while being out of control is sort of the goal, you know. So I said, well, this scene, I don't have a lot of dialogue, and I'm going to go out of control here. I want to go out of control here. I want to create that kind of connection with the audience where they're really they feel like there's some danger in the room, and I want them to freak out with me. So that's why I did it.
Well, Nicolas Cage, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Actor Nicolas Cage speaking earlier this year with Terry Gross.